You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I'm joined by two colleagues, also from our Banking and Capital Markets team. Mike George is a Managing Director in Business Tax Services, and Stephanie Humphrey is a partner in our Accounting Methods Group. So welcome both. I know you've been guests on prior podcasts, so I'm really happy to have you back.
Happy to be back.
Yep, thanks, Liz.
So today we're going to talk about tax planning for purposes of regulatory capital. Somewhat different from how we tend to think about tax planning, but something we're seeing a lot of in the market as a current topic. I think some of the trends we're seeing is that banks have less tax capacity to use credits and other deferred tax assets. You know, in some cases, this might be because current income is lower than forecasted. And honestly, it's hard to turn off tax credits that are in the pipeline or have a tail over multiple years. And then in other cases, we see reduced tax capacity for purposes of regulatory capital when we look at adverse scenarios and stress testing. So under stress, there just isn't the same amount of income. And so today we're going to talk about some interesting ways that tax planning can help capital impacts, whether you need these currently or hypothetically. So why don't we start, Mike, with just a little background on how tax impacts Basel III regulatory capital and the current state of the rules. And I will preface by saying there is a full podcast on Basel III Endgame if you want to listen to prior podcasts. But why don't we just give a brief overview, Mike?
Sure, I can definitely give the cliff notes. Like you mentioned, we've talked about this on some previous podcasts. But at a high level, capital is what the regulators use to monitor the bank's financial condition. And at various points of times, calculations and in various forecasts, banks must prove that they meet certain requirements with respect to their capital ratio. And the capital ratio is regulatory capital divided by risk-weighted assets. And tax can impact both the numerator and the denominator of that ratio. For the numerator, certain DTAs are disallowed from capital. And these DTAs would be DTAs that depend on the future profitability of the bank, such as NOLs and credits, and also timing DTAs that exceed a certain percentage of the bank's equity. And then the denominator can also be impacted by tax. So DTAs that are not subtracted from capital and cannot be carried back are applied at 250% risk weighting. So another piece of this that's a hot topic is proposed changes to these regulatory capital rules. So Basel III Endgame is something that's being debated now. It was proposed last summer. It's gone through a round of comments. And one of the key tax impacts from the Basel III Endgame that's getting attention is some changes in the treatment of DTAs. So currently, Category 3 and Category 4 banks are required to deduct from capital temporary difference DTAs that exceed 10 or 25% of common equity tier 1 capital. And the proposed rule change would reduce that threshold to 10%. So the threshold reducing from 25% to 10% would likely result in additional DTAs to slot from capital. So it's getting a lot of attention from banks, both modeling the proposed impact and also thinking of ways to change their tax landscape to prevent having deferred tax assets that would be disallowed.
So Mike, what are banks doing to mitigate some of the negative impacts that taxes can have on regulatory capital?
Yeah, so hopefully it's clear from the previous question that tax can have an impact on the capital ratio, and depending on the fact pattern, that impact could be significant. So accordingly, bank tax directors have the opportunity to add value to the organization and enhance its capital ratio through tax planning and other avenues. So banks are exploring tax planning opportunities to increase regulatory capital. This could be particularly relevant if capital is currently being reduced as a result of or due to DTAs in a base case, and could also be relevant as if you're anticipating DTAs being disallowed and some of the more severe calculations in your forward-looking forecast.
So when we think about the DTAs, they could be a couple different things, right? It's future tax deductions that you want to have the capacity to be able to take, but it also could be credits or NOLs.
That's right. So all buckets of DTAs are subject to this calculation, and different types of DTAs have different impacts. Tax credits and NOLs are disallowed from capital, and then other DTAs are disallowed to the extent that they exceed certain thresholds. And so as banks are doing some modeling and planning, like you mentioned earlier, if tax credit capacity is reducing, or if earnings are decreasing, if due to the economy, if certain DTAs are also increasing, there's a high likelihood that some of, or the bank will now run into certain DTAs being disallowed from the calculation or subject to risk weighting. But the good news is banks can consider method changes and other elections and think of some levers to pull when facing these scenarios to put the bank in a more optimal capital position.
In high level, if we think of these levers as something to pull if needed, there are ways to increase income today by changing the timing of certain tax deductions. And then that timing change has the result of increasing current income and or deferring deductions to a later period. And all that is with the goal of increasing tax capacity for a given year. So Mike, I think what you're saying is the timing of a lever pull, it could be current if needed today, or it could be theoretical if needed in an adverse scenario in the future.
That's right. So banks have not only been interested in current opportunities, but also building out a playbook so they have plans in place that they can utilize later if needed. And those plans can include deferring expenses or accelerating income to either absorb reversal of timing difference DTAs or also to utilize, you know, attributes that are getting built in either the current period or stress periods.
Okay. So I think that is a great intro and frames this discussion. And I want to turn to you now, Steph, and talk through a specific example, and it's just an example, but to try to illustrate the potential impact of a planning opportunity and a timing change. So do you have an example you can share with us?
Yes, absolutely. So one particular item we've seen frequently in that sort of quote playbook that Mike referenced is an election under 260 section 263 little a. It's under 263 little a-4, and it governs the treatment of amounts paid or to acquire or create intangibles. So the default rule under this section is that certain facilitative costs, specifically employee costs, overhead, and de minimis costs, are not capitalized but are currently deducted as incurred. However, there is an optional election for taxpayers to make under this Treasury regulation where they can capitalize these costs. And the thing that's particularly interesting about this election is, well, one, it is an election, which means it can be done annually. You're not locked into it over a period of time, which you frequently would be with an accounting method change. So it's a year-by-year choice. But it also has the flexibility in the costs that are capitalized and the transactions that are considered. So, for example, a taxpayer could choose to capitalize all employee costs incurred to facilitate, for example, all mortgage transactions in a particular tax year, but you could still currently deduct overhead and other de minimis costs on those same transactions. Alternatively, a taxpayer could elect to capitalize all three of those categories, employee costs, de minimis, and overhead, but they could choose it for particular loans or particular categories of mortgages that are most relevant for their purpose or have a shorter life or a longer life, depending on the fact pattern. So there's a huge amount of flexibility with this election. And again, it is an annual year-by-year choice, which really makes it very optimal from, especially from a playbook perspective, when thinking about stress scenarios and evaluating different planning opportunities. It can be something, can also be done real time with the filing of a return. So it's not something that has to be done super far in advance. So it allows a lot of flexibility. And in the industry, it also, you know, tends to include quite a lot of costs that are at least eligible for capitalization, because it can be a really broad definition of any acquisition or creation of any intangible. So the most common ones we think of are loans and mortgages are probably the most common, but it's certainly much broader than that.
That's a great example. And I love the flexibility of this particular election, both as to timing, you can take it one year and not the next, but also the types of cost pools and the different types of intangibles that it can apply to. So with this example, Mike, I'm going to turn back to you. And then can you take this example and walk us through how this could impact regulatory capital?
Yeah, sure. So in the example that Steph gave, you'd be increasing income in order to utilize, you know, perhaps attributes such as net operating losses or credit carry forwards. And so by capitalizing costs, you would create a DTA for this capitalized cost. However, that capitalization would increase your taxable income. And that taxable income would either allow you to utilize a tax attribute DTA or cause you to avoid having to create a tax attribute DTA. So you might be thinking, you know, in both fact patterns, you're creating a DTA, but remember from the beginning of the discussion, there's different buckets of DTAs for the regulatory capital calculations. The DTAs that depend on the future profitability of the bank, such as NOLs and credits, those are disallowed from capital. And so those are what we refer to as bad DTAs. The other temporary difference DTAs, they can be disallowed from capital, but they have to exceed a certain threshold before they are disallowed from capital. So all else equal, a bank would rather have a timing difference DTA on their books than a carry forward DTA, because the carry forward DTA is automatically disallowed from capital, whereas the timing difference DTA is subject to some threshold calculations before it lands in the bucket of being disallowed from capital. Ultimately, it takes some modeling to figure out, you know, how the numbers shake out and what's your what is the amount of DTAs in those various buckets I mentioned. But you can get usually find the benefit from, you know, creating another temporary difference DTA to avoid having to set up a carry forward DTA.
And if tax capacity is an issue in a current tax year, as Steph said, some of these elections you could make right up until the time you file a return. So if you find yourself with excess credits and not enough capacity, an election would help with that. But then I think really the bigger capital impact may be under the stress scenarios where you can utilize a credit with extra tax capacity and defer that deduction to when there may have been more time for recovery in the scenario. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. And as you typically work through some of the stress scenarios for your forecast, some of the severe and severe adverse scenarios typically see some pretty large losses in the first few periods. And so typically in those calculations, you'll run through, you know, fact patterns where you have, you know, limited taxable income or perhaps, you know, no taxable income, and leveraging some of these planning ideas like Steph mentioned could allow you to use some tax planning to create taxable income and avoid having, you know, disallowed credits and net operating losses.
And Liz, I'll also just add, you know, this election example is really just one example. There are many accounting methods and elections to consider, and some, to Mike, your point, that go the other direction and utilize a, I'll say, good DTA more quickly. So really, it depends so much on a taxpayer's particular facts. And I think this is where I'll just reiterate the point that sort of modeling out the impacts and having a playbook of options depending on the different scenarios and the outcome is really helpful, because there are multiple options, but knowing which levers are most relevant for a particular fact pattern can really help in those, especially those adverse stress scenarios.
Yes, totally agree. And that's a great point, Stephanie. This is just one example. There's lots of different things that could go into a playbook. And I think this is very similar to the types of playbooks we made in anticipation of TCJA, right? For rate arbitrage, we had playbooks with different timing levers we could pull. And I think it's the exact same thing I'm seeing now, where it takes modeling, but it's nice to have those options at your fingertips. And what the advanced scoping allows you to do is understand the magnitude of each potential lever. So Mike, Stephanie, thank you very much for walking us through this topic today and sharing your insights. I hope this helps our audience. It definitely helped me thinking about future tax asset and capital planning and some practical things that we can do in anticipation of that. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.